In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was formless, void, and darkness covered the face of the deep. While a wind from God swept over the face of the waters, and then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And there was evening, there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God called the dome sky. And there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the sky be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And then God said, "Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit trees of every kind on the earth that bear fruit with the seed in it." And it was so. And there was evening and there was morning the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night." And it was so. And there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures and let the birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky." And there was evening, there was morning the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things and wild animals of the earth of every kind." And it was so. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air, over the cattle and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill all the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." And it was so. And there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. So Monday, something must have happened, but I don't know about it because I don't come in on Mondays. But on Tuesday, when I came in, all of the gold carpet was gone out of that narthex, and it was sitting out in the driveway there, ready to be hauled off to the dump. And then on Wednesday, they had already laid the tile. It took them one day, and they had laid that stuff, glued it down. On Thursday, they worked on grout, and on Friday, they did that mosaic piece on that focus wall out there, and Saturday, they finished up, cleaned up, put everything back the way it was, mostly, with some obvious changes. And I was just sort of amazed all week long watching the progress happen. I would come in, and sometimes the girls were with me, and we would come in and look around and make sure not to step on grout and all that sort of thing. And it was just amazing to see how much progress was made each day. And I've been reading this Genesis 1 passage all week long. So about on Wednesday, I started saying at the end of the day when I would leave, I would say, "And Rory saw it, and it was good." I felt like that was a very encouraging thing for the workers as they were carrying on. When I was younger, people would, and teachers and preachers would talk about Genesis 1. And always, every time I heard about it, the focus was on those two phrases, "And God said," and then, "And it was so." And it was very much focused on the power of God, that God is so powerful that he can speak and it happens. And that's certainly true. That's definitely a theme that's going through this first chapter and throughout the rest of the book of Genesis. God's power is potent, it's real, and the evidence is all around us. God speaks, and all of a sudden there's light. He says a word, and the seas roil, and dry land appears, and he speaks, and the abundance of life is here. Power is certainly a theme, but today I want to turn the gem of this passage and consider another facet of it. Yes, there's power here, but what really interests me is what God does with that power. Because Genesis 1 is a piece of poetry. It's art. You can hear some of the rhythm in it, the way that we read it before, the way that we broke up the passage. In Hebrew, it's got a very repetitive sort of formulaic thing. To the best of our knowledge, it was used in worship as sort of maybe a read and response kind of thing as we did today. Perhaps it was even sung aloud. I don't know. I don't know enough about it for that. But it has that poetry about it. And one of the beautiful things about poetry is that it has multiple facets, multiple truths at the same time. So consider verse 2 again for a moment. It's what Robert was speaking about to the children, about how the Spirit of God, or in this translation, the wind of God, that's the same word in Hebrew, was hovering over the face of the deep waters before creation. Meaning there was something before creation. Before God spoke, there was something that he was working with, because God's Spirit was hovering over the dark, chaotic, formless, empty waters of the primordial universe, whatever they may be. And then God goes about creating something out of that. But there was something before, and he's improving upon it. So on day one, he begins separating things, because that's how you get order out of chaos. That's how you give something form that doesn't have form. You put everything in its place, put it where it belongs. So on day one, he separates the light and the darkness. He speaks light, and he calls the light day and the darkness night, and that's a good day's work. He quits for the day. He comes back the next day and picks it up again, and he separates the waters that are above from the waters below. And in this, in the mind of the Hebrews, the world is shaped like almost like a reverse snow globe. Okay, so instead of the water being on the inside, water is all around the outside everywhere. There's water just waiting to swallow everything up, except that God holds the dome of the sky up and keeps the waters up in the air from submerging and drowning all of us, as it will do in Genesis 6 later on. But for now, God creates the dome. He calls the dome sky, and the waters below are called seas. On day 3, he separates the waters below. Again, we're separating things, creating order out of chaos. And the dry land appears, and it's good. It's very good. And then he causes these trees and flowers and fruit and every vegetation of every sort to come up, and he calls it good again. And now that everything is separated and in order, he's going to fill it. It's almost like a canvas. It prepared the background, and now he's going to fill in the foreground with the good stuff. So on day 4, he's sort of starting over again. He's repeating 1 through 3 in that same order. Day 4, he's filling up the day and the night, filling it up with the luminaries of the heavens, the sun, the moon, and the stars. On day 5, he fills up the sky with the birds of the air, and the sea is filled with life of all sort, and he declares after day 5, it is good. And if you've ever snorkeled in the Caribbean, no doubt you have seen some of the goodness of the life of the waters. It's a beautiful thing to behold. And on day 6, he creates bugs. I'm going to have to ask him about mosquitoes. I don't understand. And the other beasts of the field and animals of all sort to fill it up. And he says, this is good. This is good. And on the end of day 6, he says, let's create human beings. Let's make it in our image. Let's give them dominion over everything that we've created. And so he creates human beings, male and female, and he blesses them. And he tells them, this is all yours. You have dominion over everything. And then he says, this is not good. He says this is Tov Ma'od in Hebrew, which we translate as very good. And one of my Old Testament professors said that was a terrible translation, possibly the worst in the entire Old Testament, because it's far more than very good. He said the way we ought to translate that is that God jumps into your lap while you're sitting down and grabs you by the ears and screams in your face, "Look, good!" And that's the translation of Tov Ma'od. God is unbelievably, exceedingly pleased with what has happened. We are created in the image of God, and that is when it is called very good. 7 days, and the seventh he rested. 7 days it takes. And seven times he declares, "This thing is good. This is good." And in East Tennessee, it's easy to believe that, because you can look around at the beauty of this world and know it is good. The Smoky Mountains are at our back door, and we can go and wonder at the majesty of them, the beauty of the earth. I've had the good fortune of traveling some of this world. I've ziplined in a jungle on a volcano in Central America, and that was quite a sight. I've watched the sunset on a desert mountain in Mexico. Beauty beyond belief, colors I can't describe. I've heard the roar of Niagara Falls in my ears, and I've felt the ebb and flow of the Atlantic Ocean more times than I can count. And some of you have had good fortune too and have traveled. If the Rays were here, they would tell you about the Grand Canyon and the beauty of the earth that they've seen, the wonderful majesty of it. The Turners could tell you about the rare treasure of New Zealand and all the beauty that that rare land holds. I have a friend who right now is on the bottom of the world at Antarctica, at the research station there. And he describes some of what he's seeing. It's beautiful, even in its desolation. We live in a wonderful, beautiful world that God has created. And it's full of life, full of beautiful things. It's easy to fall in love with creation. If you've ever seen river otters play with a ball or with each other, you're going to just fall in love. I want to hug one so badly, so badly. It's one of my deepest desires. If you know a river otter, let me know. Our neighbor's got a new puppy. If that puppy, when it brings you a ball, if you don't throw a ball for a puppy, I'm not sure you're a human being. That is one of the deepest, most satisfying pleasures on this planet, throwing a ball for a puppy who's so excited about it. Bird songs in the morning, clouds that float, and you can imagine and dream what shapes they are. Watching a full moon rise and glow silver in the evening. The scent of the flowers. Yeah. We live in a good, good world. But, according to Genesis 1, it didn't come from nothing. It came from something. Let me take a brief moment to make an aside here that Genesis 1 is not meant to be taken as a science textbook. It's a poem, not a textbook. Poems tell the truth, just as science does, but in a different form, in a different way, a different matter. It's not necessarily concerned with factual reality. It is telling the truth. Consider a poem by Langston Hughes, just a line, actually. He said, "The calm, cool face of the river asked me for a kiss." Does he mean an anthropomorphized flowing body of water literally grew a voice and beckoned him for a kiss upon his lips? No, of course not. But he's telling the truth, that a river is so beautiful that one would want to embrace it in such a way. That's the truth. It's not a fact, but it's true. And the truth of Genesis 1 is God created the world in all of its beauty. The truth is that artists use the materials they have at hand to create the most beautiful thing that they can. And God is that sort. Out of the chaotic mess of matter and energy that he is finding in the universe, the raw materials, he creates a ballet of the cosmos that dance all around us, a symphony of nature that we can sit and behold and wonder at, a feast for our senses. We can listen and smell and touch and taste and see
that God's creation is good. God, the truth is, God makes beauty out of imperfection. We were going to someone's house to go visit recently, and we were riding in the car on the way there, and we know our girls, and I imagine they're a lot like most kids, and what I mean by that is that they're curious. And so anytime we go to someone's house for dinner or whatever, just for a visit, their instinct is, we need to run across every single square inch of this place and find out what is everywhere. And so we're giving them the pregame talk. We're not going to do that today, okay? We're not going to go in their bedroom. We're not going to explore here. They want to go see everything. They want to open every door, go into every closet, go into every bathroom and go, wow, as if they were raised in a jungle, have never seen a bathroom before. So we're telling them, look, we're not going to do that today. Matter of fact, we're going to institute a new family policy because my youth minister training kicked in all of a sudden, and I said, here's our new family rule. We are going to leave it better than when we found it. That was drilled into me when I was about 14 years old on these youth trips. Because every time we were about to leave and go someplace, our youth minister would tell us, we have a very good reputation, and you're not going to ruin it for us. You're going to leave it better than you found it. So whether we went to the beach, or we stopped at Wendy's, or a gas station, or we were at a mission trip campsite, or whatever, any place that we were, leave it better than you found it. So our group would oftentimes wipe down tables at fast food restaurants before we left. Or we would pick up trash on the beach, even though we didn't put it there. We would scrub out toilets in a retreat center, even if we weren't required to, actually, I found out later, which was news to us. But we would leave it better than we found it. Leave it better than we found it. That's what God is doing in this Genesis 1 passage. Every day, God rises up on a new day, and he takes the thing that he finds, and he's going to leave it, at the end of that day, better than when he found it. And every day, at the end, he said, this is good. This is good. And I always assumed that he was talking about creation. And I think he is, of course. The creation is good. Each day, it's improving upon the last. But I got to thinking, what if he is declaring that the act of leaving it, of improving upon it and leaving it better than you found it, what if that is what is good? Leaving it better than we found it, it is good when we do this. And maybe many of you are thinking, great, it's a beautiful poem, it's a great story. What in the world does it have to do with us today? I want to read you a few verses out of the Nave translation. It's a very sophisticated translation. God said, let's make people in our image to be like us. So God made them male and female and blessed them, saying, fill up the place. Get it under your control. You're in charge over all the fish and the seas, the birds of the air, the beasts of the field, every plant, every fruit tree, every rock and river, everything that has life. You have dominion over all of it. It's yours. We are created in the image of God, which means we have the fingerprint of the divine on us. Something about the divine nature is within us. So if God picks it up and makes the best thing possible out of it every day, then that's our job too, because we're created in God's image. We have dominion over it. And that's not good. That is very good, God says. It's only after we're given dominion, control, lordship over all of creation that God says, it's not just good, this is very good. When we follow in the image of God, when we also make the best thing possible out of the world that we are given, that is very good. That is what we are meant to be. I've heard some, very many, who have said that because we are given dominion over this world, we can do whatever we like with it. And that's true. We can. It's ours. It belongs to us. God has given it to us. And so we have dominion over it. That word dominion is a royal word. It's a political word. It refers to a king's domain. When they come in and they seize control over an area, they have dominion over it. And so, whatever the king says goes, right? And so the earth is that way for us. Human beings can do whatever we like with it. And that's true, of course. But I want you to imagine for a moment, if there was a king, maybe in the middle centuries, who decided that he was going to take all of the crops out of the field of his domain and put them all in his storehouse. And he takes all the fruit off of the fruit trees and he puts it on his banquet table for feasting. And he takes all of the trees and he cuts down half of the forest because he wants his castle built up bigger to impress the other royals. And he diverts the streams into his own castle so that he can have indoor plumbing, newfangled thing of the day. And he sets his guards to patrol the upstream river to make sure no one messes with his water supply. And one day the peasants come, many of them, and they say, "My lord, we're starving. There are no crops in our fields. The fields are bare. And the trees are gone, which means the game has all left and gone to another place where they can be and live. And the streams are guarded in the upstream and downstream. They are full of refuse from the castle. Lord, have mercy on us." And the king says, "It's mine. And how dare you lecture me on what I do with my land? Be gone from my sight." You and I would say, that's an evil king. And we'd be right. Sometimes it's good to be the king, but not in such a kingdom. What worries me is that so many of our kind in this world are those kinds of queens and kings. We think we can do whatever we like with this place because it's ours, and so we'll take every saleable item that we can pull from the earth and from the environment and use it for whatever we like. We can build whatever we want, wherever we want, because it belongs to us. We can throw our things wherever we like. We can put whatever we want into the air or the water or bury it underground because it all belongs to us. God said so. And that worries me because that's not our destiny. That's not what we were made to be. That's not the image of God. We were called to be something far better than that. We're called to leave it better than when we found it. That's what having dominion means. That's what having lordship means. It means we make it better. That's what a good king does. They make their kingdom better than when they took over. We were meant to be better. We were meant to be artists and caretakers and co-creators with God. Over the coming weeks, six or so, I believe, we're going to be talking about the mothers and fathers of our faith, characters from a family in the book of Genesis, and we're going to run through that. And I want you to pay attention to a couple of things as we do over the next few weeks. I want you to pay attention to what they do and to what God does. Because some of these mothers and fathers, they get it right, and they live up to the image of God, and they do what they're supposed to be doing. They're trying to make the best out of whatever they're given. And others do not. Others simply say, "This is mine, and I'll use it however I wish." But God, throughout all of it, is making the best thing that God can through every situation. No matter what he's given, whether it's good or evil, God is trying to turn the best thing possible out of it. Like some ingenious artist who takes the raw materials that he's given and tries to create the most beautiful thing out of it. So I want you to remember in the weeks to come what we read today. I want you to remember that the Spirit of God still hovering over creation, all over this earth, dreaming of the potential of what it could be. I want you to remember that God is still calling us, still creating, still blessing, and still speaking good about us. And I want you to remember that Christ is still leading the best way forward, making the best out of it all, making the very best out of it. So remember that you are created in the image of God, and you are meant for great things. You are meant to create a more beautiful world than the one that you got. You are called to create beauty and care for the beauty of the earth, to care for the wonder of life, to care for the gift of creation. It is your birthright and your destiny to be more like the image of God that you were created in. You are created in the image of God, and that is very good indeed.